Sorry, Captain Cameron, you were saying that...
No, that answers it fine. I would just like to go back and get this a little clearer in my mind in terms of the timing, because you took over the convoy as the escort group on the 1st of September.
Yeah.
But your first sighting of a submarine wasn't until the 9th.
9th, was it?
Yeah.
I can't remember the date.
And, where in the conversation that we're having, one might get the impression that this was a battle that took place over a period of a few minutes. But in fact, from your report of proceedings, it covered the 9th, the 10th, and the 11th.
That's correct.
It was a
three-day battle.
A long main battle, wasn't it?
I think 66 hours, the official report puts it at, doesn't it? 66 hours. I haven't turned that into days yet, but that's about 3 days, isn't it? I'd forgotten. It was 7 days before I had the first attack.
But actually, 9 days.
10 days. So that's 3 or 4 days forming up. You can see when we were very close to the shores of Greenland. And I'm just going to bring in a point here that you should approach Greenland. There are masses of small icebergs, and they added to the problem tremendously. These icebergs that broke off from big icebergs, you'd see them. And the northern lights at that time of year just lit up the whole sky. And you could ram a submarine with a reasonable chance of success, but you don't ram an iceberg. And these small icebergs were all around us. Mm-hmm. And I guess there was a pretty... I'd like to talk to a nice German captain of a submarine. There must have been quite a problem to him, too. We were having a frightful problem on those. If you could... Mm-hmm. What is it? 9/10 is it below water, isn't it? And they were all around us in this area.
What about ramming a submarine in general terms? Is that... That was a...
I'd like to get on with the convoy battle. Perhaps you have some more questions, Keith.
Well, you made a contact, I believe, on the 9th at 10 o'clock in the morning. That was your first contact, and I think you carried out an attack on that particular submarine. Do you remember that?
Oh, very clearly. That's my friend who had his telescope so far above the water, I'm sure he was taking pictures of the ship he'd sunk. Or not quite sunk. She was half afloat. And I did a pounce attack on her, and then I did a search for her, and I had, I think it was Kanogami with me at the time. And I got...
Aurelia,
was it? Aurelia. And we kept on that submarine, and we had a very firm contact for some time, and then we thought, we believed, and wrongly so, I would think, now, looking back on it, that we'd sunk her, because the huge bubbles came to the surface, and we saw oil, but we learned after the war, the submarines would discharge oil from their tubes and make them look as though they were sunk.
Then, if we could just move on to the tent.
Yes.
We have 5 sightings, beginning at 1 o'clock in the morning and carrying through until almost 6 o'clock in the morning, I suppose, to dawn. A very busy night. Six actual sightings that night.
Yes.
And then on the following night, the 11th, again starting just after midnight and carrying through until the early hours of the morning. 4 sightings, which included attacks. Now, it would be impossible for all of those to remain very clear in your mind after the passage of time, but possibly one of them turns out and sticks out in your mind, and perhaps it's the one that Chris was referring to. You were actually pursuing an attack when the convoy did the 45-degree turn, and I believe you had to come up very sharply, did you not, to avoid collision?
That was turning down inside. Your question is, was I attacking the submarine at the time?
Yes.
That was in the middle of the night, if I remember correctly, going through the convoy. Middle of the night, I was probably attacking in the right ahead of the convoy, and found myself in the best position to go through the convoy rather than and remain with a contact and get at the stern of the convoy. I can't remember the exact circumstances at the time, but I was very, very concerned to really believe submarines were very interested. Submarines were actually in a convoy. I hadn't believed at that time the submarine would go in a, would surface in a convoy. And I think we were making history. I think we this convoy was used a great deal for mapping out the tactics of defense of future convoys, because it was, I think, as Captain, my Captain D at the time, I can't remember who he was, if I remember on the report proceedings, Captain D, he was an Englishman, Captain D in Newfoundland, he said it was quite obvious to him in study of the convoy with his staff that submarines had made a point of getting into the convoy. And I said earlier, some of the valuable ships were in the center of the convoy. Three tankers out of four went up. Does that answer your question? We're talking a lot.
You lose one of your escort vessels around the same time. Is that not correct, Captain Cameron?
I think all your escort vessels survived.
No, but your the Aurelia takes off with a tanker.
Oh, yes, I think Aurelia had a little boat of her own going on the side.
Yes. Captain Briggs, he was sent to CBC later years. That's a character. He went off and had a contact, and then he was a sunk tanker, a damaged ship, I forget what it was, and he oiled from her, and then took her in tow. But by that time, he knew there was another escort group coming to relieve me.
Now,
he towed her into Greenland, Iceland.
Into Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
You heard about her later on.
Yes. I lost all touch with her.
I keep
repeating to everybody here that it's hard to visualize, even for a landsman, to understand that three-quarters of this world is ocean. He first has to grasp that, and then he finds it's like a needle in a haystack looking for anything in this ocean. Let alone to find a 10-square-mile target, people can't find. The enemy had the worst time missing convoy after convoy. The distance and the communications was very difficult.
Especially with the small number of ships you had.
Yes, yes.
And the thing we haven't mentioned is that all ships would be darkened in the convoy.
There were
no lights.
No. Very good point.
So you really had your fingers crossed, I imagine, to...
Seeing
that everyone was in their proper position.
Yes, it was very... I keep repeating, these merchant ships stuck like... They listened. Every order was obeyed immediately. Everything was done. They did their utmost to remain together in the convoy. They'd been told and convinced that their basic protection was to remain together.
Well, when you came down into the convoy yourself, did you either sight... Or here.
I saw the submarine, yes. I could see it on the other side. First time I saw it myself, my second tooth, see all my bridge pointed out to me. They saw it. Yes, on the other side of a ship.
Was this because you had fired star shells?
Yes. We were all lit up. We were part of the game was to drive them under the surface.
Yeah.
They were less danger to us. I learned this in this convoy. This is, talk about getting job training. This was the best job training I ever had. A submarine submerged takes a long time, longer time to get in position to fire her torpedoes, has to maneuver slower speeds and everything else. On the surface, she is much more, the submarine is more vulnerable, this too, but she's in a much more danger to the convoy.
Well, having sighted the sub in the convoy, was there anything you could do about it?
Nothing.
So you just kept on going down through the convoy?
Yes.
Yeah.
I couldn't turn with the... If you could imagine, I was using full speed on both my engines, the stern and the head, to try and outmaneuver the ships.
Yeah. Was there any of the convoy ships themselves, the merchant ships...
Damage?
...which had armament which could fire at the
submarine? Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's the one... Wonderful question. That's the way we used to indicate targets, too. All merchant ships were told at the conference that whenever they saw a submarine to fire whatever they had. They were very old, antiquated guns they had, but they all had one or two, or Orlikans, or some of them had 3-inch and different types of guns. Mm. They'd all fire at this. That's the best indication where your target, where your enemy, where the enemy was.
Yeah.
The best, it's a very good enemy report.
Yeah.
Now, presumably the merchant ships also had sightings of the submarines, which they passed to you from time to time.
Yeah.
Would that be passed to the Commodore and then on to you, or directly to you?
Well, they broke WT silence. So much information was coming in.
I was just thinking of the communication, because, as you say, with the number of sightings, the number of ships, and if the radio was broken...
Yes and no. You'd never have more than one merchant ship report a submarine at one time, probably, or you'd have 10 minutes later another ship would report it.
Mm-hmm.
While this was going on, Admiral, there were, of course, ships being sunk and survivors in the water.
Yeah. Terribly sad. That was a lesson we learned. I'll answer your question here. It was after this convoy, they decided they'd always put either a rescue ship or try and have some of the stern of the convoy, because it's very hard on to know that you haven't got a hope of getting picked up. And you can't afford to take much time picking up survivors. I don't think we picked up more than a small percentage of the people that were they were sunk in this convoy. Very small percentage we were able to pick up.
I
didn't pick up any.
Because you're a fighting ship, it would be the other tankers that would pick them up.
The other corvette picked them up, and occasionally, a merchant ship would drop a lifeboat and leave it there because they couldn't stop. There was no way. You don't just stop and pick up survivors here.
I understand that.
You can't, and the whole convoy keeps moving on with its. It's an unbelievable...
Sailing majestically.
Yes, and the odd lifeboat was left behind with survivors, to pick up survivors.
In your report of proceedings, you mentioned that 91 survivors had been picked up by your escort ships and 116 by the merchant ships.
Yes, that's a... I hadn't realized that. I hadn't read that report for many, many years. 116 we got altogether.
Yeah, 116 plus the 91.
Yes. I would say about 2/3 would have died then.
Yeah.
Well, and the survival rate with the water temperatures and things too, I guess.
And of course, these survivors would be kept on board the escort.
Yes.
Until a convenient time came for you to transfer them.
Yes. Yes.
Because eventually you would have to break off to return to Newfoundland. Would you keep the survivors with you, or would
we keep the survivors with us? Yes. We keep the survivors. We did. We broke off and didn't go to Newfoundland. We broke off and went to Iceland.
Yes.
Where we refueled in Iceland.
You were having a fuel shortage at this time, or because of
tremendous fuel. That's why.
Because
of
the high speeds you were running, is that correct? You were going through your fuel quite rapidly.
Yes. Right. The fuel was the biggest worry on that. Fuel consumption was the biggest problem one had, because the Corvette had a greater endurance than had Skeena, and Skeena having to use her higher speeds to get around the convoy over the biggest problem at that time, apart from loss of life and part of loss of convoy and everything else, was fuel. I got to Iceland and I rang down finished with main engines, and the chief rang up and he said finished with all oil. I was as close as that.
Well, one thing that interests me, again thinking of that convoy in itself, within a very short time of your first contact with the submarines, you realize, again for the first time, one or two things. First, that you're being attacked by a large number of submarines.
Yeah.
Second, that some of those submarines are in the center of the convoy.
Yeah.
Now, my question is this. Facing this unique style of attack, could you do anything but flail out at the individual submarines as you saw them? I mean, did anything form in your mind at the time of trying to beat them, this particular type of attack?
No. This very much so. I've never, that was the biggest lesson of my lifetime, that I had to drive them down under the surface. All I could do was get them under the water. Mm. They were a greater menace on the surface, and they were reforming, they were gaining bearing on the convoy. I had to get them under the water and astern of me. I that's all I could think of at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I passed that word to every escort. Rejoin the convoy. Drive them under. It was a brand new one to me. Somebody who'd been trained in this Aztec who remained with the contact and got a ping and made a well-planned attack and dropped these depth charges and came in with another attack, having spent 10 years in some of the early talks that I've had with Chris on this. I explained to him what this Aztec situation was and the courses we went through the weapons we had there, but it was, you had been always expecting to search for a submarine and do a well-planned attack.
Mm-hmm.
It hit me like a brick on the head that this was no longer possible. Mm-hmm. My orders to everybody was, drive them under, starshell, gunfire, get this thing through to not so I wouldn't lose 66 ships, I would lose 19, mm-hmm. Get the submarines under the water. It was the only way I could get the best out of this convoy. This was so clear in my mind. And what I was so interested in, both the Admiralty and my senior officers accepted this. Whether they were right or not, I'm not saying Jimmy Hibbert was right. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that what did Captain D say? Have you got his remarks on that?
In other words, they didn't come up with any new ideas.
No.
Yeah.
I could read you. I've still got them here.
Well, I think one recommendation you put forward was that when an attack developed, provided there were enough escort vessels, that you should run one or two or three corvettes into the convoy lane.
Yes.
So that you would have your screen on the outside plus corvettes on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about this earlier.
When did you
In the report of proceedings, there is a Western Approaches remarks and Captain D. Halifax's report. You probably read those, Captain Hammond. Yeah. I don't think you have. Have you got them with you now?
Yes, I have.
Oh, what Captain D. said, he couldn't criticize, didn't he?
That's true. Yes.
When did you know the you were going to be relieved in that sense that the Admiralty were sending out more vessels?
Oh, I couldn't remember the time, but I knew they were coming.
Now, will this be the start of the attack?
No. This is
the second day.
Nobody thought of me until I'd had 2 days of attack. I was on my own out there. I'd forgotten. They sent out about 11 ships to me, didn't they, or something?
I think on the 11th of September, this was that the British ships joined you, or at least joined you.
I mean, I stayed with them a very short time, then went on to...
Now, before that happened, however, there were two Canadian corvettes, Moose Jaw and Chambly, who helped you.
Yes. That was Captain Prentice's idea. That they had small groups that would cruise around between the convoys in the Atlantic. There were no killer groups.
Mm.
What we needed badly was a killer group. Somebody could stay and kill a submarine. Now, did I make that point tidy or not?
No.
You haven't. Well, it's awfully important that you kill these bastards. You've got to get a kill. It's the best thing you can do. And when you're forced to just compromise by getting your convoys through, the safe and timely arrival of your convoy is the objective. The safe and timely arrival of your convoy. But it can't always together be called a subsidiary objective to sink a submarine. And this was Captain Prentice had requested this group to form a group in the Atlantic who would go between convoys and have the chance not to be responsible for the protection of the convoy, who could stay with the submarine to make a kill. And he did. He did just that. He got two or three in his time in the service. But he, on this particular convoy, was ordered to join me. And while he was approaching the convoy, from ahead, this brings up my point of submarines gaining bearing on the convoy, getting ahead again to be in a position to fire torpedoes. They were concentrating. He came right down on top of a submarine on the surface as he was approaching my convoy from ahead.
Mm-hmm.
That was his first kill of the war. And he had the which Moose Jaw, was it?
Yeah.
And Chamblay. Does that does that make the point clear?
Yeah.
I'm chatting a lot here, and it's hard to get so much into it.
So his ships were a kind of roving patrol that moved from one
That's
convoy
right.
to another.
That's right. Hunter-killer groups, they called them. It was a very good idea.
But that was a bit of a fluke, really, in this convoy, wasn't it?
Yes,
that turned up at that particular
one. I guess if you get enough needles in a haystack, you run across a needle.
Yeah.
And he came right out of luck onto this submarine, never expecting it. He was coming down onto me.
Yeah. Yeah. Did during this particular convoy, did any of your ships claim a kill of any submarine?
No, we claimed one. I think it's
probable.
We didn't get any raw flesh,
mm-hmm.
or survivors. The only real test of sinking a submarine is some real blood.
Yeah.
Only Admiralty confirmed kills as well. Is that not correct, sir?
I believe so. Yes, for their intelligence, but.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed your Captain D classified it as extremely probable.
Yes. And I think he was probably, whether he ever got back to Germany or not, I think the history would find that he got back to Germany. I would say that he got back to Germany, but he was no more use on that convoy to anybody.
During this 2 or 3 day battle, would I be correct in saying that you would have your most intense activity at night and that the daytimes were fairly...
Yes.
Quiet.
Yes, on the whole, that would be the case. Remember, though, in September, you get quite a lot of night and these latitudes.
Yeah.
And 5 o'clock dark, and that is those latitudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dawn about 7, you know.
Yeah.
Most of the kills were at night. Most of the kills were at night.
I'm just wondering when you, as the senior naval man, could get some rest yourself.
Well, you didn't get really any. You didn't. It's amazing how you get stirred up to a thing like this.
Yeah.
You don't. You don't need it.
You don't get it.
You don't get it. You don't. You survive. I can't explain it. It's you're so involved in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Time goes by. You're, I was a little tired at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about munitions and things? I mean, you were firing star shells a lot and laying patterns. Were you running out of depth charges and star shells this time too, sir?
Yes, just about. Just about out of everything like that. It wasn't the same as my channel actions, which you'll come to later, where I emptied the magazines. I didn't have that. But
you were getting low on that, so that was another concern, as well as the oil, as well as...
Yes, although I didn't have time to take stock during that. I didn't... Said, go easy on it, huh?
Okay.
Now, one thing that has puzzled me is why the submarines didn't attack the escort.
I will never understand that myself, Captain Cameron. I will never understand that. Had I been Prinn or one of the better German captains, I would have concentrated on Skeena. I would have concentrated on Skeena because... Even the merchant navy knew that, and the thing I'm so proud about in that convoy, I'm just mentioning it, I'll come back to the convoy in a minute if you want me to, but when those ships got to Scotland, they had a conference, and they sent a signal, they sent a letter, air signed by every captain. I've still got that letter in my... I think I'll leave that letter with the museum one day. I have a letter from the... Because you're going to do this convoy in the museum's going to show this convoy, aren't they?
Yes,
I'll give you that letter, Keith, because I have a letter signed by every captain in that convoy thanking us for what we'd done. Thanking us for what we'd done. And my own ship's company felt so strongly about this, they took out of their own pocket and decorated the Allied Merchant Seamen's Club in Halifax. They put their hand in their pocket and put all the furniture in the Allied Merchant Seamen's Club in Halifax. Now, I just can't get over to you what these merchant people did. They won the war at sea for this. They won the war at sea for us. And do you mind if I tell another story on that right now? The SS Bruce, wasn't this convoy, another convoy later. She was carrying pit props. I was in a see. And again I had Skeena. And she was sunk, and the bow stayed afloat because we carried pit props, and most of the ship's company went to the bottom with the engine room and the bridge was up in the bow and was kept afloat. It was just dawn, so I thought I'll pick these guys up, and I made him a signal, make a raft. Well, he tried to get a raft away from the floating tanker in the high gales in the Atlantic, and he eventually got his raft away. And of course, you don't paddle a canoe, there's a raft. I had to get Skeena working full speed on the engines and throw my stern under the raft. And he had five men and himself, and one was killed when we did this, and I got four of them by lassoing them and bringing them aboard. 2 months later, I have a letter from this captain, a Norwegian, and I'm proud to say one of the proudest decorations I have is the King Haakon Cross. I had a lot to do with Norwegians later on Russian convoys. But I had a letter from this man, and he says, this is a letter which I still have on my, these letters I think should go one day to the museum. Thank you for saving me and my four men. I now have a month's holiday with full pay, and now they give me a new ship to carry on the war. I'm a lucky man. Now you can't meet stuff like that. If we have Canadians grow up like that, we will never lose as a country. It's these people. I keep reporting, you know, these are stories that you'll get. I think I've got it in my record. Did you hear my, I think I put that in the, in my speech that I gave you the other day.
Do you have any time, Mr. Machina? Do you have any more questions about the convoy?
No.
One thing that interests me, how the convoy ends from your point of view. Am I right in thinking that the convoy is taken over by another group of British ships?
I turn over my command to another Britisher came up, and he came up to me, and I said, this is the situation at the moment. So he reformed his group, and I sailed for Iceland.
To the...
Reykjavik.
Reykjavik. Right.
Yeah.
You go there with your three or four corvettes.
Yes.
And you arrive in port, and is there any... Well, what happens at that point?
At that point, you as soon as you get to port, you oil, by the way.
Yeah.
You go alongside, you fuel, you provision if you need them, and you go off. I had to turn back, I think I had to turn back in within 48 hours to join another convoy coming out. And Captain D says, the only day in port in a month was that one. And I picked up another convoy coming back. But fortunately, I had a wonderful fellow that had made notes during this. His name is Wilcox. Did you ever meet Wilcox?
No.
Oh, he afterwards became a senior partner at Price Waterhouse. Just a top-notch fellow, an Englishman who lived in Canada. And you know that he, without doing anything else, he wrote notes, the whole convoy. And so the report of proceedings was written immediately after this thing. Well, it was clear, and I had everybody in the ship come in, one after a turn, and the signalman who sighted people, the yeoman, the officer of the watches, and as we dictated, and had a magnificent shorthand man, and as we dictated, and this man had all his notes he'd taken during the convoy.
Damned. Was he on board your ship?
He was on my ship, in my ship. He was in the Skeena with me. He had about a year and a half of the Skeena with me.
Is there nothing else to do but take notes?
He had lots to do, but he was magnificent. He just did that, and he never left the bridge, and he did that the whole time. He was my, what I call, executive assistant in the ship. He was an older fellow, and a very able, very fine officer, and he... I always had Captain Cameron as my executive assistant. Always have a good executive assistant. Not be very good myself. I get somebody to do all the work. But he did. He did all this. So we were able to write report proceedings during the 24 hours we were in harbor.
When you did this, did you do it at the request of someone or for your own?
No, report proceedings is a must. Every time at sea, you do report proceedings,
whether you are attacked or not.
Oh yes. Yes.
I see.
It's still a requirement.
It's a requirement.
Yeah, I see.
Even to this day, it's a requirement.
Yeah.
Admiral Hibbard, you were awarded the Distinguished Service Cross for your actions during this convoy.
Yes.
When did you become aware that you were to be presented this award?
Oh, I think that 3 months later.
So 3 months later.
Yes.
Because there weren't that many given DSCs, I think about 4,500 during the whole war, and very...
Well,
do you remember the makeup of your ship's company in terms of regular force?
Yes, very much so. There were tremendous fellows. I would think that about 85% of mine were regular Air Force fellows, were regular people. You see, the Skeena was a beautiful ship. It was a beautiful ship. I took command of her in 1940, the 1st of April, 40, and she had been just picked up for the King and Queen had traveled in her in that autumn of 39 in their visit to Canada. She was a beautiful ship. The ships went those days. She was a really, for 19, early 30s, an up-to-date ship. And one of the things about, I can't help record here, that how engine room stood up to this. Not only personnel, the equipment stood up to it. There was no breakdowns, none. I think it must never be forgotten in this, endurance of those ships is simply magnificent. She was, you know, jamming full speed ahead, full speed astern on engines, and ships were wonderful pieces of equipment. We were very short of weapon systems to kill the modern submarine. I hope you people that take us into the next war will be better equipped by your government than we've been.
Who are you kidding?
Oh, that's fun. Do you have any further questions?
No.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Admiral Hibbard, Dr. Roy, Captain Cameron. We got some good stuff.